Talk about being prepared. Leaders of the World Economic Forum anticipate a cyber catastrophe for 2023. Between emboldening cyber criminals and ransomware as a service thriving, the threat of cyber attack on U.S. soil is getting worse. In fact, 86% of business leaders and 93% of cyber leaders believe we're headed to a catastrophic cyber event soon, most likely one that attacks and shuts down the power grid, potentially leaving the U.S. in a modern-day dark age for months. This is why myself, along with tens of thousands of people, are preparing for the worst with Nightwatch Pro. Nightwatch Pros are affordable night vision binoculars that allow anyone to see with predator-like vision in pitch darkness. They're perfect for watching wildlife, scenic viewing, surveillance, patrol detection, home protection, and much more, especially in an extended or life-threatening power outage scenario. Plus, they include high-end night vision features like 4K video recording, a clear HD display, 5x zoom, anti-shake technology, and long-lasting rechargeable battery. The best part is that Nightwatch Pros are 60% off for the rest of this month or until they sell out, whichever comes first. Plus, you'll also receive several additional gifts free with every order for a limited time, including a 32GB SD card for your new night vision binoculars, express shipping, and 100% lifetime guarantee replacement. Get yours now by going to nightwatchpro.com. That is nightwatchpro.com, or click the link in the description. Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today, we have two returning guests, Matt and Joy Thayer. Matt and Joy are filmmakers. They are creating the latest film, The Trump I Know. This is going to be a red carpet event, and I don't think anyone should miss it. And I am very happy to have Matt and Joy on the X22 Report Spotlight. Matt, Joy, welcome to the Spotlight.
Hey,
thank
Dave.
You so much for having us back.
Good to hear you again.
Yes, thanks for coming back. I mean, there's a lot going on around the world right now. We're just talking before we came on air. I mean, let's just talk about what's happening out in Israel right now with the war. I just wanted to get your take on it, either Matt, Joy, either one. You guys can just chime in. What is your take on what is happening? Do you think this will lead to a world war? Do you think this will get worse? What do you think is going to happen here?
I hope it doesn't lead to a world war. Yeah. I think that China and the CCP would love to have this end up as a world war and spread our resources very thin. And we've been, putting all of our effort, all of our efforts towards Ukraine and everything. But I think that the Palestinian government and the Hamas, they don't really want anything. They want total annihilation. And so without the support of America, I think that they really need our help right now. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm concerned about.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. We were talking about a little bit beforehand, but just, the narratives that just aren't sticking, like the hospital,
right.
I think a perfect example, it's like all of a sudden, it exploded. It was tragic, awful, just totally bad. Right. But then it's like the way that they immediately jumped out in front of it and trying to spin it as if this was, an Israeli attack. And then all of a sudden it's like, now you've even got Biden coming out and saying, like, well, actually it was the bomb that just just a stray bomb that blew up. And so that all just disintegrated. And I think that's what's interesting right now, I think, in comparison to any other time in history, is how quickly the narratives that are being seeded out by mainstream media or legacy media are being counteracted, and so it's just kind of a fascinating, because it's like, used to be like wait 6 months, now it's like wait 6 hours.
Oh my goodness, right?
I mean, yeah. It's like pretty crazy.
But I think what we saw when President Trump was in office is that we had no wars anywhere.
Right.
He was shutting all of that down, and he did unprecedented peace in the Middle East. We had the Abraham Accord, we had a bunch of different things that he was doing, and I highly believe that if he was in the White House right now, that we wouldn't be having this issue over in the Middle East.
No,
When I think back to with Iraq and everything with George Bush, and they continually told us, they have weapons of war. Back then, the fake news, there really weren't that many social media platforms. They were very tiny back then, but they really controlled the narrative. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had no other place to really look unless you dug in and did some research, and then you started to understand what was going on, but you couldn't spread it anywhere. You couldn't say, hey, by the way, this is fake. And I think what's happening now, since Elon took over Twitter, now calls it X, and with True Social.
In honor of you, actually.
he stole my name. Holy crap. So with Rumble and everything else, I think what's happening now is that they're trying to keep a narrative. They're trying to control it, but it's, as they like to say, it's debunked within a couple of hours. They can't do it anymore the way they used to. And I think this is going to be a major problem for them moving forward, because, listen, we've come to find out with the Twitter files that the government was censoring people. The government was involved in, you know, shutting down doctors, lawyers, anyone's account that didn't go with the narrative. And now that people know this, it's very, very difficult for them to censor. So I personally think they might take this to the next level, because if you can't censor people on an individual basis, they might, you know, maybe shut down certain things.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, I mean, because I was even thinking about it a little bit further and kind of come back around to your question there, but or to your thought is, you know, growing up, I mean, we're about the same age, and, you know, you would always hear of, you know, conflict 29. In the Middle East. You know, you would always hear of, you know, you're 29. Yeah. But you would always hear of, you know, conflict in the Middle East. There was just always unrest. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what's interesting is, like Joy was mentioning, you know, Trump comes into office and all of a sudden it's like ISIS is just eradicated, is gone. And he gets these Abraham Accords. And so, like, there's this peace there, right? And so there really was this kind of pause, you know, with these conflicts in the Middle East that we have just become accustomed to. And I think when you just constantly, it's kind of like hearing a drippy faucet, you know, you constantly hear it, and then all of a sudden it's like you tune it out. And it was kind of the same thing with the Middle East conflict that was going on our whole lives. And then all of a sudden it was like that drippy faucet got fixed. And right. And now they're intentionally trying to get something going again. And now, wait a minute, it's causing a dissonance with people of like, well, how cool, hold on a second, what's going on here? Why is that happening now? And maybe maybe people aren't really actually consciously asking those questions, but subconsciously it's like affecting people. And so it's just really interesting, like what you were saying too, in conjunction with the fact that now that you have citizen journalists, you know, like yourself and, you know, other people who are doing regular broadcasts or talking about the news of the day, deciphering things, digging into stuff and projecting out like another, maybe not necessarily a complete other counter narrative, but at least asking questions that are causing people to go, wait a minute, hold on a second, let me look over there, instead of looking at what the legacy media is just projecting outward all the time. And it's starting to create a lot more dissonance in people's minds, where, you know, and I think that's good, because it's like people have to recognize that there's, you know, there's something like that going on,
right?
You know, and I think that people are starting to become more aware of that. I don't know if you experienced that or not,
but I think that to his point as well, though, because they've tried to censor in whatever way they possibly can, and so you have the legacy media that's owned by a monopoly of companies, and you've got the big tech involvement and partnerships, and we've got all of these different things that are going on, and we've got things like Truth Social, and we've got things like Rumble, and we're going around all of that. Mm-hmm. And right now what we're experiencing with the narratives over in Israel and all of these Palestinian protests in the United States is they're trying to craft that narrative, and they're seeing some cracks in that. And the concern would be, if they can't control it and the truth gets out there, are they willing to go to something more
and just shut it down? Yeah,
that would be something that people need to be mindful of and prepared for. And we, you know, prepare for the worst and hope for the best kind of situation. But when people are desperate, they make desperate decisions.
They do. I mean, this is how desperate they are. I mean, since we're talking about censorship, I mean, the Biden administration, they actually went back to the Supreme Court because they want to censor people. They, I mean, really, if you wrap your brain around this whole thing, we have the DOJ, the Biden administration, who's supposed to be upholding the Constitution, they're going to the Supreme Court to ask the Supreme Court to reverse the ruling so they can censor people on social media. I mean, this is, if you said this 8 years ago, 9 years ago, people will go, well, that's just ridiculous. That really, you really think they would do something? That doesn't even make sense. Why would it? But you're having it happen today. And this is how desperate they are. They're actually pleading with the Supreme Court to censor.
Yeah.
it's such an upside down world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right now it's, you know, we keep going back to and talking about the founding fathers. I mean, they'd be turning in their graves. Mm-hmm. But when you look at history, I mean, look at what they faced and what they fought down. I mean, they had to create parallel economies. They had to create parallel, you know, information networks and committees of correspondence and all that other stuff, because, you know, they were dealing with very similar types of actions. You know what I mean? The technology was different, but it's still, they were, you know, the English government, the crown, was circumventing and trying to keep running, you know, their own narrative. And it's the same thing now. And so it's like, it's not surprising, because it feels like tyranny has the same bag of tricks. That it's like, tyranny is just tyranny, and they're going to do what tyranny does, which is try to shut down the voices of people. And, you know, if that doesn't work, then, you know, who knows, they might take a stab at creating like a cyber attack kind of false flag or something like that.
If they go to cyber attack, I think they're going to try to get the American people to actually ask for censorship, because I think that they're using, I think this is just an opinion, because we're experiencing all of these protests everywhere on the college campuses and throughout the state. We've got a protest happening at the Capitol right now. And these are not, they're not peaceful, nonviolent protests. They're actually seeking for the death and destruction of the Israeli people. And so I think that they'll say, do you see, this is bad, we should censor that, instead of actually handling that, those situations, and saying, this is not an appropriate place to do these kinds of events and all that kind of stuff. And so I think they're moving to craft it where we actually ask for it, not just comply with censorship, but where we are inviting censorship because we don't want these things to be happening. But they should, what we should do as citizens is say, hey, that protest shouldn't be happening on this college campus. That shouldn't be happening in the Capitol. What they're requesting is heinous, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because we have this protest, you know, a few years back in January. Mm-hmm. And they're using these different things. So they censored that protest. They're not censoring these protests, and they're trying to get us to actually get involved. I think they're playing with people's minds right now. But,
well, yeah, because it's like the same thing with the Second Amendment. If they can get you to give up your guns voluntarily, then, you know what I mean, they've won, right? So it's the same thing with speech. If they can get you to give up your speech voluntarily, going like, oh yeah, no, we, this is totally dangerous, please censor us.
The nonviolent coercion stuff, yeah, right? And like, they have
to get people to give up their rights voluntarily. They're never, you know, they're never going to be able to take the rights away from people without some sort of counteraction happening.
But I think in an extreme case, I think that they would be happy to take our grid down, because that makes everybody feel so unsafe and uncertain, and it puts people in a position of fear. And so I think that that's
my wondering, though, is who are they going to blame it on? Because that's the thing, I think, Russia. They're going to try to blame it on Russia. But the problem is that
this is our day to day life.
Yeah, their narrative isn't sticking. You know, mm-hmm. on the, like we were talking about, the narratives kind of just start falling apart and crumbling so quickly. So it's hard to get, if that's what they're trying to do, is create some sort of a false flag situation, then they have to have a patsy, and they have to be able to set up that patsy.
Or climate change.
Right. Or whatever. Right. And so, but each one of those narratives seems to not be working as far as getting that set up. So they're going to have a hard time passing this off on somebody, which is probably one of the reasons why they haven't resorted to that yet, because it's like they have to have that in place.
They're trying to keep that in the back pocket.
Yeah, they always.
This is all of our surmisings.
Yeah, they always fall back on the Russia thing because that's what they have. They're not going to say, oh, by the way, it's China. Oh, but they always fall back to Russia, you know, with the Hunter Biden laptop, with Trump, you know, manipulating the election. It's always, it seems like it's always Russia.
Yeah,
and I agree with you that they want us to say, just like with weapons, you know, oh yes, there's mass shootings, we need to take the weapons away. Oh, look at the protests, you know, we should stop this. But it could work the other way, actually. We see the protest going on in the Capitol, and yes, everyone say, look at this insurrection. Well, if they're allowed to do it, then you must release everyone from prison then, because, right. you know, if you're not going to arrest these people for an insurrection. So all those people that were in there, they don't have to look around for their pictures. They don't, they're standing right there. Everyone was taking pictures. Everyone knows who they are. If they don't arrest them, I think then the narrative is, well, you didn't arrest these people. They were in there. How did they get in? Did they go through the metal detectors? Who let them in, actually? Mm-hmm. If you really think about it. And if you don't arrest them and put them away and keep them in prison for a year, just like the January 6 people, then you must release the January 6 people. Mm-hmm. So this can actually work against them. And actually, I think the gun control thing is kind of working against them now, because now you see, you know, out in Israel, what happened with people coming over the border, going into yeah. people's homes and hurting them. Mm-hmm. And now that yeah. we have had open borders, people are very nervous. And people that I've been speaking to, they're very nervous that, wait, are there cells inside the country? Did they let them in? And if yeah, they right. are, I actually want a weapon now. Actually, I was speaking to a couple of people that do not like weapons. They completely yeah. against them. And now they're thinking, maybe I should just have one in my home just in case, because now they're watching everything and they're afraid. Mm-hmm. So I think this is kind of backfiring on them a little bit. And I think put it this way, if there is something that happens with, hopefully not, if something does happen in this country and people learn that it is a terrorist or something like that, they're screwed. I mean, that's all their narratives just go down the drain there. Open borders, gun control, everything. So,
well, yeah, and I think that's the thing, is that, you know, truth and logic will always end up ruling the day, because it's a lot easier to maintain truth and logic, because you just tell the truth mm-hmm. and do something that's reasonable versus, you know, trying to, you know, spin a web of lies. It's like you end up, it's like a spider web, you know, it just ends up getting confusing and convoluted, and then you end up getting stuck in it yourself and you can't remember which part you told last. And, you know, that's really what's happening. And that's why, you know, a lie, I believe that's one of the reasons why, I mean, God set up the universe this way, is that, you know, it's like when you try to create something out of lies, it always ends up falling apart, because there's just nothing that can hold it all together. And so that's why the truth and logic will ultimately always, you know, win the day.
Sometimes it just takes a little bit too long, though.
It just takes time.
I think that, you know, that's the trouble with where we're at in our society, is I don't know if enough people have hit their pain point to mm-hmm. wake up and do something. And that I don't know personally what to do about that, because you want to go shake every person that you know and be like, hello, can you see what's going on?
Well, I think that's why when Trump was, I forgot where he was, but given the speech and he said, you know, we're in a pause, I think he knew coming into all this that it would take time for people to wake up, and people wake up at all different times. I mean, someone who lost their job and they see the economy failing, oh my God, I just woke up, I'm pissed off, I'm angry. Someone with the open borders, you know, who lives down in the South, you know, in Texas or Arizona, right there, those people are waking up. So I think every step of the way, I don't think he would be able to, or, you know, this whole entire mission, which I do believe is happening, I don't think they could wake up everyone with just one little thing. I think it was going to take many different things to wake up the population and actually break the brainwashing of the fake news. And I think it takes time. It's almost like if you go back to the 70s and remember when we had all these cults and they used to go in and they rescue people and they drag them out and they wanted to go back to the cults because they were brainwashed into it and they had to deprogram them. And it took a while. It didn't happen overnight. And eventually they were deprogrammed and they started to realize that, holy crap, you know, I was praying to a head of lettuce and, you know, that was... and, you know, I was doing all these things and it was crazy. So I think it's going to... take a little while for people to wake up. And I think going through 2024, especially with people seeing the trials and Trump being indicted, I mean, he had the mugshot. I mean, he played that perfectly. He put it on a coffee mug and a shirt and he sold it.
The best thing ever.
It was great. Now he's talking about when he was out in Iowa saying that, you know, I will be happy to go to jail and... Mm-hmm. Talk about being prepared. Leaders of the World Economic Forum anticipate a cyber catastrophe for 2023. Between emboldening cyber criminals and ransomware as a service thriving, the threat of cyber attack on U.S. soil is getting worse. In fact, 86% of business leaders and 93% of cyber leaders believe we're headed to a catastrophic cyber event soon, most likely one that attacks and shuts down the power grid, potentially leaving the U.S. in a modern-day dark age for months. This is why tens of thousands of people are preparing for the worst with the Light Bug. The Light Bug is an ultra-bright, mini-portable floodlight built for life-threatening power outages that you can take with you anywhere. This savvy solution to blackouts is so effective because it uses solar power instead of traditional energy, making it excellent in low or no light situations, including emergencies, cart repairs, fishing, camping, night markets, and many others. It also includes life-saving features like a built-in power bank for charging, an adjustable bracket, battery indicator, and more. The best part is that Lightbug is 66% off for the rest of this month or until they sell out, whichever comes first. Plus, you'll also receive several additional gifts free with every order for a limited time, including express shipping, 100% lifetime guaranteed replacement. Get yours now by going to lightbug.com. That's lightbug.com. You know, to save democracy. I mean, can you imagine a picture of him behind bars? Do you know how many mugs and shirts and everything he would be able to sell? It would be absolutely crazy. He'd make a fortune off of these people that are trying to put him away.
I know. That's what I told people. I said that $200,000 that he posted in bail was probably the best investment he's ever made.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I don't know if he's going to go to jail or not. He did mention it. But I mean, if he does, I think the people are going to go, holy crap, look what they just did. I mean, if he's trying to show everyone election interference, if he's trying to show everyone that they rigged 2020, I mean, I think the first phase of it is, okay, let them see the election interference while I'm running for president in the 2024 election and let them see it every step of the way, because it'll be a lot easier to convince people that they cheated in 2020. And it looks like that's exactly what he's doing.
No, I agree. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, because we work on a lot of documentaries, you know, worked on election integrity documentaries, worked on this, you know, this project with the president. And the thing is that so many people get kind of focused on hyper-focused on, we got to fix our election system, which absolutely 100% we do.
Yeah.
But election interference happens in tons of different ways. Mm-hmm. And if you don't expose all of that, then they're going to be like, okay, fine, you can fix your little election system, but we're still going to control the narrative over here and still get people through Google searches and, you know, like you were saying, like controlling the narrative or you know, trying to get people to think, you know, about a candidate one way or another. They that's all election interference. And if you don't expose all of it, then people will ultimately end up just going back to sleep and watching their football games.
Right.
And we have to recognize the length and the breadth and the depth of the problem.
Well, and for President Trump to fix our democracy, he has to put it back on we the people. Mm-hmm. And so he can do everything that he can and get back into the White House and everything and be in charge in front of everybody and have the next 4 years. But that's it. If he goes out after that, what are we going to do?
Right.
And so we the people have to be empowered. We have to start voting in our local elections again. We have to start voting in our state elections. We have to be involved. And so in fixing the democracy, he's going, you guys have the power and you need to take that back up.
And take control of our own thoughts,
right?
You know, and recognize and process information differently. We just all have to learn how to do that. Literally take every thought captive and going, hey, where is this coming from? Who's this coming from? Who's saying this? Do I trust them? Even if I do trust them,
Is it accurate?
Is it accurate? You know, it's like, you know, I mean, I listen to your program quite often, you know, and it's like, I still, you know, it's like, and you encourage people like, hey, do your own research. I mean, that's what you have to do. You know, you can't just because I trust, you know, you, Dave, and you're my friend and, you know, and everything else. And you've become a trusted voice and somebody that I listen to. I still have to, you know,
I still have to filter,
you know, that through a process of questions in my own mind. And that's, only you can do that. Only people can do that for themselves. Nobody else can do that for you.
Yeah.
You can't be lazy and let somebody else do that for you.
I 100% agree with you, and don't trust me. Let me ask you this. I mean, you said you're working on election documentary. I mean, as we move into 2024, we saw, you know, 2,000 mules. We saw how they cheated, which I do believe they did cheat, because I don't believe the person in the basement won. How do we overcome their system? Because when I look at the elections, I see it as they created this election system. It's their system. It's not the people's system. It's their system that they created for cheating. So how do we overcome? I know Trump on his Iowa tour, he said, you know, we need to go back to paper ballots, voter ID, one day voting. I think almost everyone agrees with that, because that's what we've been doing for a very long time. But their system that they created is these mail-in ballots, drop boxes, the Dominion machines, you name it. I mean, they just have all these different techniques, the illegals coming in where they're, you know, automatically registering these people. So if we're going to go up against them, which we are in 2024, how do we do this? I mean, I hear Trump saying that we need to do what they're doing, but what do we do? How do we overcome their system?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of it's not an easy answer.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's the thing that nobody really wants to hear. It is a complex problem, and a lot of times we've been taught these days to just run away from complex problems, and not to really dig in and figure out what's going on. But you know, in addition to the fact that they've created this, you know, call it the election industrial complex, where you have, you know, people that are literally sucking at the teat of these, of this whole system, you know, that has been created around voting for the purpose of making money and for cheating.
Yeah.
There's also a system of rules and laws. And, you know, and that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about in this new documentary. That's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks is, you know, the system that has been set up to keep people from actually contesting elections, and how that's been set up to deny those cases. Mm-hmm. And so people need to understand that that's also a system that needs to be cracked and dealt with because it's not just. Mm-hmm. And so, but how do you do that? Well, you just have to keep pushing at it. How do you break down anything? How do you break down any fortification? You know, you have to keep coming at it with a battering ram, that you have to keep coming at it with more information, new lawsuits, new documentaries, new exposing, you know, you have to just keep cracking it. And like I said before, the fortunate thing for us is that they've built these systems based on lies. And if we understand that and we keep coming at it with truth, the truth is always going to bust through the lies. It's just the only reason why a lie wins is because truth stopped battering against it.
I think also the awareness piece is one of those things. If people are naive and they don't know that this has been happening under their noses, that's one thing. And so then if they all of a sudden become aware, then they have to start doing something. They can't just be, because that's part of the issue with this movement that everybody says I'm awake. They might now be awake to the truth, but they still don't get involved. And so they need to do something. And the first place you would start with elections is your local elections. Find out what's happening with your city council. Find out what they're voting on, how often they're voting on it. Are they having private sessions? Can you go? Do you have the time, the energy, anything like that? Can you get involved with a group and somebody from the group goes? Like, there are ways that we can start at that local level. But if we're not if we're not impacting our local community, it's going to be much harder to impact the nation at large. So we can't just go out and vote every time that there's a presidential election. We need to be voting for our sheriff. We need to add, as everybody has realized, how important school boards are. You know, those are things that people can do. And then just because somebody's doing something wrong and they're cheating doesn't negate us from the responsibility to do what we're supposed to do. Because that's the other thing you hear is people go, well, what does it matter if I go out and vote? You know, what does it matter anymore? It's all rigged against me. You still have the right and responsibility. You know, you're going to be answering to our creator. That's what you have to do, is show up. And if enough people show up, we break the system, like you've seen in 2020, and they were trying to rig an election. You've seen it in 2022 when they had all of these elections and so many people showed up in mass. It exposed the fraud. So on just a ground surface level, we're not going to change this overnight. We took us a long time to get here. They have rigged it against us. But we still can do something. And I'm going to be one of those people that go down with the ship if the ship goes down, you know?
Yeah. And the encouraging thing is that I feel like they're scraping the barrel when it comes to these tricks, because they had to pull out so many stops in 2020 and 2022, like you mentioned. I mean, some of the stuff that they're having to resort to is becoming extraordinarily obvious. And when the court systems or whatever deny the evidence or anything like that, or just pass it off as if it's like no big deal, people can't not see what they've seen, you know? And so it's starting to become more and more obvious that there's an issue in all of these places, and people are actually starting to wake up and do something. And like I said, nobody wants to hear that it's a complicated issue. Nobody wants to hear that I can't tell you what to do about that. Like, I can't. You can't.
They want an easy fix.
They want an easy fix. They want us to give them marching orders.
It's like a fat person wanting a diet pill.
Right, exactly. I don't know. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Everybody's metabolism is different. I can't tell you how to diet, right? Mm-hmm. You have to do it for yourself. You have to figure out what works for you and your local community and how you can get involved. But that's a process. But the encouraging thing is, through that process of actually engagement, you're going to find new strength and you're going to find new cognitive awareness. You're going to find something inside of you that you've never found before and you didn't know existed because it was dormant. And that's also a part of waking up. It's not just a waking up to the consciousness of it, but it's waking up to your own internal power. And that's one of the things that, you know, we've done is, like, you know, when it comes to what do we have our giftings? Well, we can tell stories.
Yep.
And so, you know, when we make documentaries, we make things people like to watch. So how can we engage? Well, this is how we can do that. And so how do you do that? How do you show up into the world? And only you can answer that question.
Take this back to the beginning when we talked about people waking up. And people wake up with all different types of information. Some people like to listen to podcasts. Some people like, you know, going to seminars. And people like to watch documentaries, because documentaries, you can put a lot of information into it. People have seen many different documentaries and they're starting to go, oh, I get it now. I see what's happening. And that's what's, I mean, your talent is creating these documentaries and putting this out and putting the information out. And your latest one, and I've never heard of this before, and I don't think a lot of people have heard of this before, a virtual red carpet, which I find because everyone likes the red carpet. They want to walk down it. So you're having this, you're showing your new documentary, The Trump I Know. It's a virtual red carpet premiere. So just tell me about this film. Why did you decide to make it? And what is it about?
Well, like Joyce said, I mean, neither of us had voted for President Trump in 2016, and we actually made...
We didn't vote for Hillary.
We voted third party, yeah. But we were Ron Paul fans, thought that the whole, bi-party system is broken and didn't trust Trump and had bought into some of the narrative. And so when we were asked to make this film, we actually made this film back in 2020, and we had an opportunity to interview Laura Trump and over 30 women that knew the president. Most of them, probably in the high 20s, like 27 of them that we interviewed, know the president personally, and also a few men. But it was all coming from the standpoint of how do you get to know a person, and through that we were able to kind of reveal our process of how we ended up becoming Trump supporters because of the way that we kind of like you were saying, like, wait a minute, this narrative that's coming out, you know, against him being a misogynist. It's like, well, yeah, but he, you know, hires all of these women and make, you know, has a woman as his pastor.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bigot. He's a racist. It's like, well, yeah, but he just empowered this single black woman to be his spokesperson and gave her the ability to do things from home because she was concerned about her son finishing high school.
Identity politics.
Either. And not for identity politics, just because that's who he is as a person. You speak to his family, to somebody that's helping run his winery. So, you know, in this story, we captured all of these amazing stories that the American people should know about the first family. And unfortunately, it's been kept from the American people. And like Joy was saying, if we had heard these stories prior to 2016 and a lot of people probably before 2020, if they had heard these stories, they would have given Trump and his family a second look and gone, wait a minute, hold on a second. Maybe the stuff that I'm hearing isn't true or it's been spun. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these women that shared these stories with us, they told us they were interviewed by the Washington Post. They were interviewed by the New York Times.
Yep.
Their
stories were twisted.
Their stories were twisted, taken out of context.
Not even used at times. They would say that they interviewed them, but they wouldn't quote anything that they said.
You know, they've interviewed over a dozen women, and here's what two of them kind of said, because it was the stuff that we could take out of context and twist it. You know what I mean? Like, that was the kind of narratives that were coming out. And so, unfortunately, we've just had a hard time getting this out to the public, which is why we're doing this, like you said, this virtual red carpet event, because we want it to be a big enough event that people see this and like and engage with it, because it's just gotten harder and harder for people like us to create, you know, these well done documentaries, something that you should see on a Netflix or you should see on HBO. But because we're actually favorable to the president, we'll never actually be on those platforms. So how do you continue to produce high quality products, mm-hmm. And get it out to the world at large? And so this is kind of a cool way that we're creating a kind of like a parallel distribution, you know, system or event.
But the cooler thing is, as well, is that we're doing this at Worry Studios live from Las Vegas, and it's a simulcast event. And so it's kind of like a giant Zoom meeting where people can interact. They can get dressed up at their homes. They can throw a party. If they don't want to be on screen, they can shut off their camera and they can actually be a part of the whole event.
And it's so, like a town hall kind of a thing. You can actually ask questions. We're going to have guests there too. It's not just the movie. You know, it's like there's going to be some interviews. We're going to have time to take questions.
We're going to show the trailer for an upcoming film project. We've got all kinds of fun stuff
that didn't make it into the documentary that we wanted to put into the documentary. But just because of time, you know, like you always have to cut good stuff. So we're going to show never before seen clips. Mm-hmm. And so it's just going to be a really cool event. And so we're just encouraging everybody to if you want to know how to do something, if you want to know how to engage in this narrative war, then show up for this event and share it with your friends and family, because you're going to see a side of President Trump that the media obviously doesn't want you to see.
I agree with that. And I like that you're focusing on women with this, because a lot of women, you know, because the, you know, MSNBC, CNN, you know, all you hear is, you know, he hates women, he's a misogynist, and I don't think the population realizes that he is none of these things, and he employs a lot of women in his companies. So, I mean, who are some of the women? I don't know if you can mention it or not mention it.
Yeah.
Who are some of the women?
We interviewed Laura Trump quite a few times. We interviewed Kaylee McEnany.
Mercedes Schlapp.
Katrina Pearson.
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Anna
Castillo. She was President Trump's advisor during...
Latinos for Trump.
She has some amazing things to say.
Pastor Paula White.
Gail Wilson was the Black Voices for Trump. Mm-hmm. Because again, like you're saying, is that they really go after the narratives and they try to say he's racist. Mm-hmm. And then they try to back that up with different things and statements that they've taken out of context. And then they'll say that he's a sexist, all that kind of stuff. Well, I was somebody that grew up with all boys. I have two brothers, all male cousins, grew up in the church, all that kind of stuff. During the time that we as women were trying to break through a certain amount of a glass ceiling in society and all that. And he was one of those ones that was paving the way for women and for people of color, not so that he could get accolades. This was a time where he was saying that if you don't want to be around Jewish people or Black people, don't come to my club. You know, that we're going to have these people in my club. You don't like it? You don't have to come to my club. And so he was actually taking a stand years ago. Those were stories that we weren't hearing prior to the 2016 election, for sure. Because the mainstream media, as soon as he started running for president, they turned on him hard and fast. You got to ask why. Mm-hmm. Why was he this American hero? And he was all these great things. Everybody wanted to have him on their shows and films and everything. Till he said, I'm going to do something to stop what's happening to the United States because he loves it so much. And so they started twisting all of these things. And so one of the interviews with Gail Wilson, Black Voices for Trump, she said, you know, I was so excited when Obama was going to be in office because I thought, finally, we have our first Black president, all of these things. She said when he got in office, he was doing things that were anti-Black people, the anti-Israeli people, all of this stuff. And she said, why did I vote for him? Because you look at the policies that he's putting in and he's destroying everything I believe in. Why am I a Democrat? All that kind of stuff. And so she said, I became a fan of President Trump prior to the 2016 election because of the things that he was saying. And as soon as he got into office, he was doing pro-Black policies that were not covered by the media. He wasn't doing it so that everybody would be like, oh my gosh, and win the Black vote. He was doing it because it was the right thing to do. And again, if we're just talking about what happened with Israel, he wasn't doing it right now to make some kind of thing. He was actually doing it because it was the right thing to do. So we interviewed some amazing people that share their thoughts and experiences firsthand of President Trump. And right now, I think more than ever before, people need to know the truth, because as you can see, the media is trying to say, look, he's a criminal. He needs to go to jail. He's a criminal for this.
He's a rapist.
He's a racist. And they just repeat talking points, but they have nothing behind it. And so if we notice that these women actually say he did this, and then they have something behind it.
And that's one of the things that, you know, I want to point out to people, is that there's probably a lot of people that are listening to us right now that are like, well, I know that about President Trump. I understand those things. It's like, well, yeah, but there's a lot of people that are waking up that don't. And we were just talking about, you know, the pause. We were talking about like this kind of period of time where we're going through, where all of a sudden it's like the drippy faucet's on again. We're like, wait a minute, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of people that are starting to kind of get restless with that, and they may not understand, but they're waking up. And this, we just look at ourselves as creating tools, you know, for this narrative war that we're in. It's like, and the audience can take the tools that we're creating and put it in front of people. We've put this film in front of Democrats who walk away kind of scratching their heads going, you showed me something that I've never heard before and never seen before. And so just because you've seen this, you know, you understand these things or whatever, it doesn't mean that the people around you have that information. And so we're giving you a really great, it's a fun documentary. It's a very entertaining documentary. It's something that you can put in front of your friends and family that are maybe starting to wake up, maybe starting to ask some questions, and show them a completely different side of President Trump that they've never seen before. And I guarantee you that even if you do love President Trump and you think you know everything about him, you probably haven't heard some of the stories that we captured in this documentary.
And I agree with that, because I think they hide a lot. Even if you're a Trump fan, and I think still a lot of things are hidden and people haven't seen him. Haven't seen his personal life and the things that he's been doing, because you're not going to see it on Fox. You're not. I mean, those are the Republican, you know, followers. I mean, Fox not really for Trump, but, you know, the people that watch Fox think that, yes, they are. But they're not going to be out there, you know, discussing or showing all these different types of clips, you know, CNN, MSNBC and all the rest are not. And you won't see it on many of the social media platforms because they get censored. Right away. They don't want anyone to see those type of things. So I think this is very important. How do you join up to this, and what do you have to do to actually be a part of the virtual red carpet?
Yeah.
Well, you go to ttikfilm.com, ttikfilm.com. And it's a $25 virtual ticket. It's going to be what, a 3.5 hour?
3.5 hour event.
Three and a half hour event. Devin Nunes is going to be a part of it. Laura and Eric, a part of it. We're going to have
the Flyover Conservatives
are going to be the MCs. General Flynn's going to be a part of it. We've got a bunch of people talking about, you know, the censorship, talking about the election interference from that standpoint of like, you know, how do we combat this war of narratives and get this type of information out to the American people? Because the American people, one, need to have this information so they can vote correctly, but also they need to have this information because I think there's a lot more people out there that that think, believe, see the world that the way that we do, and have been marginalized and kind of pushed down to believe that they're part of the minority, and they're not. And so and then also because, you know, people need, you know, people are waking up. People need this type of information. People are scratching their heads and going, wait, something's not making sense. This is the type of film that helps people make some sense.
Yep.
I agree with that. Matt, Joy, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. I'll be putting all the links at the bottom of the video. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come out and talk to me and talking to everyone else. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
my friend.
Thank you.
Good to hear you.
Yes, absolutely.